thank you for joining me this evening. My guest for the remainder of the show is Noreen Rayner. We'll open up phone lines next hour. If you have questions for our guest, you can be a part of the show with us. Noreen has often stated that a psychic detective should be called into an investigation only as a last resort when traditional methods have been exhausted. She has an impressive track record that includes uncanny success with unresolved homicides and missing persons. We'll talk more with her about her abilities, about the cases she's worked on, and what it's like to see through the eyes of a killer and experience the pain of murder through the eyes and the physical form of the victim. We'll also find out, does she just run into people in normal everyday life that she can sense is involved in some kind of crime, killer, or some other horrible version of that? We'll talk with our guest. You can find information about our guest by going to coasttocoastam.com. That's coasttocoastam.com. We have links for her book, A Mind for Murder, The Real Life Files of a Psychic Investigator, links to her website and more. Check it out, and we'll be back with more right here on Coast to Coast AM. Noreen Rayner, my guest this evening on Coast to Coast AM. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. Noreen, are you ever out and about with somebody and just shake hands and know that you are looking in the eyes of a killer?
No. I'm so sorry. No.
Well, because you're turned off at that point? You're not trying to tap into that, or you just haven't run across that yet?
It could be two things. I do turn it down as much as I can because I would be bombarded constantly with images if I didn't turn my psychic down, and mm-hmm. it would be overwhelming all the time. So no, I do it intentionally, try not to be psychic during my normal days. But I remember even once when I knew the guy was a killer and the police had put me in a position to see him and say, what do you pick up? I was so nervous. It was the first time I'd ever been asked that. I couldn't do it. I was so scared. But now, I've never had that encounter. I'm so sorry.
Well, don't be sorry. I'm sure that'd be horrific. No, how would you even respond to that? You shake somebody's hand and then start getting flashes of horrific things they've done. You know, that would put you, I would guess, into an uncomfortable situation. With that said, you talk about these cases. Do you ever get calls or emails or letters from criminals threatening you because of what you're doing?
A couple of times. In fact, one murderer, he had beaten up his girlfriend to try to show that he was innocent, hired me to work on the case, which, of course, he didn't believe in psychics, I guess, and he happened to be in the same town or same state I was in. That was sort of scary, but the police did arrest him, so I didn't have to worry. No, I'm not. I have a very low threshold for fear. You know, I just do my job, and very seldom am I frightened, very, very seldom.
Oh, that's great. Having that ability and dealing in the dark realm that you deal with, I would just be afraid that you would be so much more heightened and sensitive towards that kind of thing.
People say, I have all this evidence in my homes at times, you know, from different cases, and they're all lined up. They say, do ghosts just come in? I said, no, unless they have an appointment. I'm very structured, you know, no, go away. Your appointment's at 2:00 tomorrow. Get out of here. So I don't play games with the ghost or anybody else. If you have an appointment, you can come in. If you don't, go away. So I'm really bad. I don't have anybody visiting me in the middle of the night or anything like that. I'm just very disciplined in my psychic mode.
And understand this next question is not meant in any kind of disrespectful way at all. With your career and the abilities that you have, Noreen, why aren't we hearing about you on 60 Minutes, 2020, ABC Investigates? You know, why is your name not more prevalent out there?
First of all, this is 2015.
Right.
I'm 78 years old.
Oh, wow. Okay.
During my prime, I was on 48 Hours. I was on all this stuff. I was on all those shows you were talking about. 48 Hours did a really good show on me 20, 30 years ago. And then the skeptics came in. I had one in particular. There's two of them, but they did so much damage to my career. Finally, their websites are off the Internet, but they were calling me a fraud, a charlatan. There's a YouTube.
But how? Well, let me ask you this. How can a skeptic ruin a career that the police and the FBI are backing and using you for? I mean, that takes away the credibility of the skeptic. When you're able to have the FBI and the police calling you into these cases and continue to do so, it's only for one reason, Noreen, and that's because you're doing the job and you're making the connections. To hell with the skeptics say.
Over six. So it has to be something else. Perhaps other people don't want my talents to be as known. I think the FBI is sort of not too impressed with me talking about them all the time, about starting my career there. I don't think they're very happy with the book. But Robert Ressler, who was the behavioral science, who created, you know, the Silence of the Lamb and so much, he was my mentor. He believed in me from the very beginning. He was at that lecture where the police tried to trick me. He was the one that always invited me to Quantico, except for one case. The other people invited me, but he was always the one that invited me to his class and then the auditorium. I don't know. All of a sudden, no one's calling me. My shows on Psychic Detective started going around the country, and I started working in other countries because the United States wasn't using me anymore. They weren't. All of a sudden, they stopped. I don't know why. My talent didn't stop. I still could do this. So Mozambique, Australia, England, all these countries are calling me to work on cases, but not the United States. I don't know. I don't have the answer.
Do you ever tap in when you see a big case break and you see something like Natalie Holloway, who went missing, or JonBenet Ramsey? We're coming up on the 20th. How about this? I was just trying to wrap my head around this. Next year, 2016, will be 20 years since JonBenet Ramsey's murder. Do you ever tap into these cases for yourself to see if you can get any insight into what happened to him without being asked by the police?
No. And I did that in the very beginning. I would do that, and then there would be no one that wanted my information. And I know psychics call me all the time and say, no one would listen to me. Unless I'm invited into a case, sometimes I'll try to get them to get me in that case. But no, I don't do that, because then I have all this information and no one wants to listen to it. No, I'm unless you invite me on a case. I mean, I'd love to. And I knew the FBI agents that were doing the Ramsey case, and I wanted so desperately to work on it. There's so many cases I wanted to work on. They didn't call me in. They didn't ask me. Like the airplane, I wanted desperately to work on that. No one asked me. No one tuned in, because I would have to, you know, get the family members. I've got to connect some way. They need to want me to work on the case. No, it's painful, but I can't, because I know that information will go nowhere. So
right,
I wait until I'm invited, and sometimes I'm not invited.
Last hour, we talked about one of the cases, and you were trying to find a missing plane. Now, talk to me a little bit about that case, and talk to us how that broke down for you.
Okay, I had been doing homicides for the first 5 years of my career. No one really knew I was doing this. I was really quiet. I didn't, you know, go to the press, or I think a couple cases leaked out, like the first one, the Stanton murder, Stanton rapist. But I was just doing a homicide. Then this woman called me, and she said, my husband's an FBI agent, and Robert Ressler recommended you. My brother is missing in an airplane. I go, no, airplane, I can't find my car. I said, no, I don't do that. I just do homicide. Oh, please, you're my last resort. I couldn't figure out how I would tune in. There's nothing she could send me. Everything's with the people that are missing. So finally she did enough begging that I said, okay, send me something your brother wore or used a great deal prior to his disappearance. So she came to my place, and she had a tin cup where he used to put his pennies in, and an old wallet. So I described him to make sure I was into the case. She said yes. And then I started to beat this airplane to find out where it was. I don't remember everything, of course. But I remember her I remember being in the airplane. Somehow I'm up in the sky on the airplane, and I'm being pulled. So something is pulling me down, a draft of some sort. And the plane, first I was going to land in the dark, and then these lights scared me, and I'm up in the air. Now I'm going to the right, and I'm being pulled down, and I can see the trees are there. They're sort of opening up their branches for me, and I crash. No explosion. I feel a crash. I tell her, I describe the two people in the front seat, their necks are broken. I see your brother, he's picking up something and carrying it and placing it under a tree. It's very flat rocks around there. He's walking away. I then remember screaming at her, no, you just want me to see your brother alive. And then I went to another place, and I started getting numbers. They turned out to be longitude and latitude.
Wait a minute. When you said that you were seeing him alive, do you believe that you really were seeing him alive, or was it her want that was changing
really
your intention?
We found out later, remember I saw him picking up something and carrying it? It was a headless woman. They found a headless woman under a tree, like somebody had carried her and placed her. They knew her brother had walked because there were stickers in his pants where he had walked a few, whatever, to take her, put her there. The two people in the front seat, their necks were broken. The longitude latitude was right. I had seen this old gas station and this woman, a big face sort of loomed in front of me with no teeth, and then barking dogs. And when they started doing the search, it was off-duty FBI agents, off-duty, and Civil Patrol. The off-duty FBI agents on the ground found the old gas station where the woman with the no teeth were and the barking dogs. They found that. Everything was verified once they found it. My clues didn't lead to it. I think some people went out. Started snowing, the blizzard, so the planes had to stop, but they had been circling in one area, was where the plane had crashed. But it was very interesting. I'd never given longitude and latitude before, didn't know what it was. It gave three initials, which...
Wait, I'm sorry, did I miss out? You did find where it was, or you...
The longitude and latitude was right. Everything was right, okay. But it was snowing, so they had to leave for a little while, and the people on the ground had seen the airplane circling and circling, so they went out with their snowmobiles or however they went out. They found the plane.
Gotcha.
And the woman, you know, had this woman sitting under the tree.
Wow.
Yeah.
And that was
I didn't do missing people because I was so scared that I had to touch things, which later on I discovered from doing the remote viewing, which, see, I didn't believe in remote viewers. About the time in the 70s, the late 70s when I started, the remote, I think it was Morehouse, was telling the world that the government was using psychic spies. And they could do things without, you know, and I thought, oh, how can they do things without touching? You know, I was so set in my ways, you got to touch something. How do you get that energy? And they were doing it with just a series of numbers. I thought, oh, I don't believe. I just, it was so hard for me to believe they could do that. Well, years later, they're asking me to do some remote viewing, and they're going to give me a series of numbers. And I said, look, this scares me to death. I don't know if I can do this. Could I just ask you one question? Could I just describe this person and you give me feedback if I'm into it, and then we'll go? And so the person questioning me said yes. And so I described the person I saw, and she gave me a yes. And then my job was to find where he was being held captive. Because then they could ask for his release because they didn't know where he was. And see, I'm real good at finding people because I'd been working, you know, on missing persons now for, 20 years. So I could just go up in the air and they could just tell me, go 1,000 feet, go 200 feet, however they wanted, how high they wanted me to go. Then I would see the surroundings, try to describe, and then would say, well, what do the people look like? Describe what they're wearing. And I would do whatever they asked, I would do. And then within 2 weeks, she came back with me and showed me, it wasn't, I thought it was MIA that I was working on. It was a FBI agent that had been kidnapped. And he had a long beard. They showed me pictures of him being released. I don't know if they already had released him, and that was a test they were trying me on or what, but that it blew my belief system. It was like, oh, my God, I thought I had to touch stuff. How can I do this without touching stuff? So my mind is very confused. how I can do that. But I did do that. And then there was somebody in France that wanted to see if my mind could do these things. And he would just give me a series of numbers about an event in the past. It's in my, I think it's in my The Practical Psychic book, the how-to book. And I would just go where he gave me these numbers. I remember feeling all the water and the earth turning, all these things I described to him, which I think it was a earthquake and the dam broke, and I had explained everything, which was mind-boggling. He did this two or three times with me, and then he said, let's see how you do in the future. And what he did is pick other countries, and he didn't tell me what he was doing, but he picked some tennis. I think the first time it was a tennis match, and he wanted me to see the future outcome. And I was right. I mean, I love gambling with the psychic. I really do, except I can't. I had to learn how to do scores. I could always pick the winning, but then the gangsters that I was working for at the time, they wanted points, what do you call it? How many points?
The point spread, sure.
Are you a gambler? Do you know what I mean? They wanted
yeah.
Point, and I had never done numbers with that, so that didn't work out too well, but now I can understand how I can do it better. So I like gambling. I think that's sort of fun. It's quick, no pain.
Wait, you're able to use your ability to gamble?
On teams, yeah, but I could never tell. And the gamblers always knew that. Yeah, we knew he was going to win. We want to know how many points you were getting, how many points. And I didn't know about points. I didn't know anything about gambling. I like roulette. I like gambling, yes.
Wow, that's amazing, because yeah, most psychics and mediums have told me that they can't seem to turn it on in order to benefit themselves that way.
Oh, it's fun. To me, it's a game. And since I didn't know sports in the beginning, they would, and I, actually these gangsters, it wasn't the police that were asking me, and somehow these gangsters, I shouldn't call them that, what's a polite term for gangsters? Is there a polite terminology?
No, I think gangsters fixes it just fine.
Okay, so they would call me and they would say, okay, this team is, I said, well, do they hit the ball or throw the ball? I had nothing to do with sports. I never watched sports. Do they throw the ball? Tell me what kind of sport I'm looking at. So, and they would be so impatient with me, you know. But it was good. And then finally, I decided unless they gave me more money, I wasn't going to do it anymore. So,
right.
I learned to be tough.
Well, you need to be my new best friend then, Noreen, and we will we'll start
like
working. I'll pay you. I'll give you 60, 40, 70, 30, whatever you want. Let's.
I'll help you. I'm good. You just have to say help. And
all right.
That's a magic word with me. And I go, oh, okay, I'll help you. You need to know that. Yeah. I think the need to know is important. And this is why when I'm working on unsolved crimes, they're not immediate. You know, again, there's no publicity. The police give me no information. And I remember a reporter once saying, how can you thrive on these people that don't believe in you? I really like it because I'm not picking anything up from them. I'm just going to get the information. There's no emotion. They put down this block. They're not sending me any emotion. The family, I don't like to work with the family. I don't. They're too emotional. They think somebody did it. I don't like all that emotion. So I do like my cops because they're not emotionally involved in the case. They just want the answers.
Understandable, right? There's not that connection. But sometimes I would assume that working with the family, if psychometry of holding something they own gives you quite a strong bond, being with the person as well that was related to or loved that person, that doesn't make it clearer for you?
They're too emotional. They have thoughts in their head. Certainly after so many years, they've thought so many things. No, I like my cops. I really like my detectives. I really, really do. And
I guess that makes sense, right? Because if it was something personal to me and I'm so physically and emotionally attached to this and I'm kind of chaotic and I've got all this crazy stuff going on in my heart and in my head about the case, you have to, not only are you trying to connect to this person, but you've got to filter now through the crap that I've got. Okay.
That's it. I don't want to read your mind. It's not going to help. This is why when family hires me, I say, yes, you can hire me, but I have to work with the police. And they get disappointed. First of all, you and I can't make an arrest. If we're going to be serious about it, we need my detectives. Now, searching missing people, we don't need the police as much. And, of course, they don't know where the bodies are. And usually it's a body I'm looking for. We've got to talk about missing person because it's so different than homicide.
Well, we'll do that. We'll do that when we come back. We have to take our bottom of the hour break. Our guest for the evening, Noreen Rainier, we're going to open up phone lines in the next hour. If you have questions for our guest regarding some of the cases she's been a part of, if you have questions for our guest regarding her abilities and how they work, you can call in and be a part of the show in the next hour. So keep tuned in to Coast AM for that. We'll come back. We'll continue to talk to our guest. We'll find out about missing person cases, as she was alluding to. Plus, what's the oldest cold case that she's had to work on? We'll find out that and more right here on the best in overnight talk radio. I'm your host, Dave Schrader, and this is Coast to Coast AM. There is a story that has been heavily circulated over the last couple of days regarding strange claims from ex-Beatle Ringo Starr that the Paul is Dead hoax is in fact real. That Paul McCartney died in 1966 and was replaced by a man named Billy Shears Campbell. This story is zipping around the internet, is being shared, and I can't even tell you, I've probably gotten it about 100 times sent to me from listeners of both Darkness Radio and Coast to Coast AM over the last few days. Tomorrow, rock and roll author, researcher, R. Gary Patterson will stop in for the first segment on Coast to Coast AM to discuss this strange story with me and shed some light on it. Fact and fiction, what's going on with this story and why is it taking off so big? I know our Gary Patterson will also be on the show Thursday night with George Norrie talking about Elvis and the Beatles. But tomorrow we'll have him join us for the first few minutes of Coast to Coast to discuss this strange story regarding Ringo Starr and Paul McCartney. And then for the remainder of tomorrow night's show, in 2006, Bruce Van Natta was crushed underneath a semi-truck and was at the verge of life and death when he had an out-of-body experience. During this near-death experience, he saw two angels that were sent to save his life. His book, Saved by Angels, we'll discuss that tomorrow right here on Coast to Coast AM. Phone lines will be open at the top of the next hour. And if you want to speak with our guest, Noreen Rainier, you can do that. If you have questions regarding her abilities, the cases she's worked on, any part of the story that we've talked about this evening, that'll be your time to call in and be a part of the show. Noreen, talk to me about missing person cases. You said that they're so different. They're so radically different. And dealing with murder cases and dealing with missing persons cases. Now, you said that you'll only get involved, even in missing person cases, only if the law wants to involve you. What if the family wants you to give them the information so that they can take it to the law because the law is not open to those insights? Is it fair to keep the family at bay when they're seeking justice?
It's unfair because we would have information and it would be... It would escalate the emotions of them. The police aren't going to listen to a tape of me if they're not going to be willing to be on the phone with me. Once they realize I'm real, and any of the police, any department I've worked on, as skeptical as they want to be, they knew I was real. I was doing what I felt was helping them. I don't think any police department would have anything bad to say about me. We don't solve all the crimes. I mean, they come to me as a last resort. So it means that everybody's tried everything they can, and then I come in. And people expect me to solve. I don't solve crimes. I give information. You have good questions, I have good answers.
When people come to you, can you give me a firm number with the cases that have been brought to you out of 400 cases, how many have resulted?
I'm so glad you asked that. I'm a little upset now, but I'm not as upset as I used to be about the police responding to me. In the beginning, because it was new to me, I wanted to know what happened, and they wouldn't get back to me. But next detective would say, so-and-so, Detective Smith, recommended you. I said, but he never told me what happened in the case. He said, oh, it's solved. And it just got me very upset because he would never respond. So I remember lecturing to them in a big audience and saying, no, treat me like whores. I mean, you use me, you pay me, then I never see you again. And there was moans in the audience. And later they told me, you pay first.
Uh-huh. So their idea is, though, I guess to a degree you have to see why they would keep it back, because they don't want the lines blurred between what they did by the letter of the law and what you brought, because if it leaked out that you were involved in helping to crack this case, that would screw a lot of the validity up, because the courts unfortunately do not accept that psychics exist.
Absolutely. And I don't blame them. I never blame them. I finally understood. It took me years to understand, and I respected that. But then I got a better idea. Don't use me. Let me train your people. I can do it. I am a good teacher. I know how it works. I love my cops. I love my psychic. Let me train as an experiment. We don't have to say it's for real. Give me a department. Let me have a few. I don't need 100. I just need a few men, women that I can train, like in the cold cases. I mean, there's so many ways to use the mind, and we're limiting to it. Say, no, that's not logical. What we can do with our minds right now, today, tomorrow, is being wasted. Because of the disbelief, the lack of encouragement, lack of imagination, lack of backing. I'm sorry, I get very emotional.
I understand.
In primitive man, as far as the mind goes, as I'm concerned.
All right. When you say that you want to teach them, do you think you can take police officers that maybe don't have a psychic bone in their body and open them up to teach them to do and be as effective as you are?
I can teach them to be better than me, and I can't teach them all. It's like, give me a group of 20. For artists, some of you think you're an artist, but you're not really that good. I want an energy and an open mind, and I can teach. Yes, and they can be better than me, because they know cars. Because what I had trouble with, they would describe, what kind of car is he driving? And hell, I would know a Ford from a Chevy. I couldn't figure out how I would tell them that answer, because I couldn't. But policemen, they're trained in the very beginning of their careers, a vehicle identification, things of that sort. So whatever you're good at in this reality, I can make it work in the other world.
All right, when you're talking about teaching people and opening them up, and I'm sure you have 20 people, maybe 7 or 8 will get it and be able to have that ability. Do you run into the fact that you have people that pick up your books that want to learn, that want to open up, that just can't? It's just stilted? Or are you one of the people that believes that we all have this innate ability to do this?
I believe we all have it. It's sort of like intelligence. We all have it to certain degrees. I have no idea how to do any besides add, subtract, and divide. My mind, I don't care. Our neuron, the mind, the way it's wired so differently, that we're all going to learn how to use this ability in our own way. But the only way I can teach is the way I know. But they should just take that as a springboard to develop in their own growth a way to do it. It can be done, but we don't have enough imagination to realize in the different categories it can be used. What I'm doing is nothing. It's nothing.
All right. Well, obviously, it's not just nothing. There's something to this. I mean, you've got an amazing ability that most people just don't have. I know I've tried. I've gone to courses trying to see if I could tap in, and I just don't have that connection. It just doesn't occur.
And it's okay, because maybe you're so much better at some other aspect. We're not all going to be great artists, great musicians, great psychics, but it doesn't mean that we don't have that. Everyone keeps telling me I can sing. They really don't know I am tone deaf. I mean, from a southern accent to New York, it's not that easy for me to tell accents. They thought I was, they spoke a different language when I went to school because of the way I pronounce words. But it's just the hearing, I think. Anyways, but hi, Dave, so what's next?
I appreciate it. I know it gets emotional. I'm guessing doing what you do, and you've been doing this for many years, and been effective with these type of cases where you get the answers on this. Have there been a few cases that just get away from you? You can't get an answer, and you start to obsess over it.
Oh, heavens forbid, no. I always think I'm good. And then I'm on to the next case. I don't know the word for someone that's always into the future or the now. You know, you all are always trying to find that. I'm in that. You know, what I did yesterday or that emotion is gone. This is now. And we have tomorrow. So I'm very focused on what's next, not what I did.
Well, I understand that.
Book.
Is it harder?
Talk about my book.
Well, and we will. We'll talk about that. But is it harder when you're doing these cases? Is it harder working with cases where children are involved?
Oh God, yes. You're so faint. Is it my phone or is it you? I'm really straining my ear to hear.
I could try to speak up a little bit for you, and I know the engineers now. We'll see if they can boost it. But
wow, thank you.
Can you hear better now?
Yes. Who's got the Does somebody have a sinus problem around you all?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay. Okay. Go ahead.
All right. But so talk to me about that. When you're dealing with these cases, is it tougher when there are children are involved, or to you, is it all the same kind of case? Because
The children. Remember the Michigan case where the woman was stabbed? Well, what I didn't tell you is they confirmed that, and then said, we want you to go upstairs and see Mary or whoever, Sally. I really don't know the little girl's name. And I said, no, I don't want to. I said, it's not going to help you. I don't want to see how she, I don't want to. And for some reason, and I really wish they hadn't done this, they made me be her. And I was a little girl, and I was hiding in a closet that didn't have any doors. And I could see.
Our guest this evening, Noreen Rainier. No, it's understandable, sweetie. I understand that. Our guest is a psychic investigator, a psychic detective, and she's helped in over 400 criminal cases. Talking to her about the abilities and sometimes these connections she has and how they impact her life. And as we're discussing the brutality of dealing with some of the children's cases, so it's understandable that you would have that kind of emotional impact.
I did a flashback. I was back there. But, okay, yes, let's move on. Yes, but I, as you mentioned it, somehow I just went back and I could see her being stabbed. They had yanked her out of the closet. But can we move on? Can you put my mind someplace else?
Certainly. Talk to me about a favorite case. Which is one of the cases that you really enjoyed working on and felt... connection to.
A favorite. It's a horse case. I'm in Virginia. You know, we're horse country. I'm being pretty well known, you know, low-keyed that what I do. And this thoroughbred horse was shot. And the sheriff had no clues. But they called me and they said, the family wants to hire you. And I never tuned into a horse before, so I pretended. I really was cocky in those days. I can't believe it. And I acted like I do that all the time. I said, okay, I would need something from the body, from the horse. I also want, I demanded a few things, like I knew what I was doing. And so we meet in this barn. We're in a barn. I'm sitting on some hay, sheriff, deputy. I have an artist, a bunch of people around, and I'm holding the horse's tail in one hand and a bridle in the other. And I'm getting into the horse, and I'm seeing faces, but there's so many, and they're coming too quickly. The artist had stopped drawing. The horse didn't know how to focus on killer. I mean, I don't think, but so he was just showing me everybody that he was around. I described the groom. I described his trainer. I described all these people. So we had to stop, and I had to think, how am I going to do this? He was shot. I wanted the bullet. And they said, no. Once it's shot, it's called a projectile. And they sent somebody back to get a piece because the bad person had to load the gun. And then I could get that energy that I think I need and describe that person. So they ran back. We did it. And one face came up of a woman, and I described her, and they knew immediately who it was. The owner of the Thoroughbred horse had divorced this woman a few years ago and had just remarried a much younger woman, and she was getting revenge. He didn't press charges, but she had to get psychiatric help.
Wow.
Is that a neat one?
Yeah. I mean, it's there are days that I would think, boy, I would give anything to have the abilities that you have, Noreen. But then there are, you know, you listen and think about some of the things, how it would impact you. And I don't know that I don't know that I would be strong enough to deal with something like that. Talk to me about the President Reagan assassination. Now, we have about 4 or 5 minutes left in the segment. Talk to me about how that came to you and what were you able to do with that information?
Okay. It came to me. It was interesting in several ways. I think 5 days before the assassination, they had printed some prediction about him having some problems in the upper chin. Oh, he'd just been elected November 5th. Maybe that was it. But it didn't allude to, you know, but going to have some, I was tuning in, going to have some upper chest problems. That was about all I said in that. And then I'm in front of the FBI. I'm lecturing at the academy. Reagan has just been elected, and it's in question answer period. They're saying, how do you something about the president? So I'm seeing how popular he is. And then all of a sudden, I go, I'm getting some pain in my upper left chest. It's coming from outside of me. And I mention a date or something. And then somebody else wants to know if it's going to snow in Michigan or what. And it diverted us from this. Now, anything at the FBI is taped, you know, whatever we did. So after the attempted assassination, they showed the CIA the tape, and they said, "Why didn't you tell us?" They said, "We didn't believe her." And I had so of course, and then phones are tapped and mental records are tried and checked, and I met my first Secret Service man, and that was sort of interesting.
When things happen like 9/11, and there's this horrible mass death. As somebody who's sensitive, do you feel that ripple through the plains? You know, I mean, do you feel that wave before you even know that it's hit?
No. This is what is so sad. Either I don't pay attention or I don't care. I don't know what it is. I saw the pictures. I saw the television. And it sort of like thwarted or would it contaminate anything I saw psychically. I don't know. I just didn't. Or maybe it would have been too painful. I don't know. Because I know all these psychics saying, I got this. And I'm going, I didn't get anything.
All right. Why? Do you ever tune into your own future, Noreen?
Oh, okay. No. Well, I shouldn't say no. Okay. You're fading on me again. But I believe so strongly in creating our own reality through prayer, clarity of want, wishes, understanding ourselves. But every once in a while, I'll do the pendulum. I'll write several yes or no questions and then scramble them up so I fold them so I don't know which question is which, and then just do the yes, make sure they're yes or no questions. And sometimes I don't like what I get. And I go, phooey, I'm going to try to change that answer. And I might put some energy, physical, mental, emotional energy into the area that I wanted that I don't see coming at that point. But yes, I do, but not as much as people think I would.
Does it ever, see, that's one of the things I've always had friends, medium psychics, they'll want to read me or tell me something. And I just don't want to know about my future. I'd prefer to have it happen when it happens.
I love it. I don't think I really want to know either, because what if it's something sad? I mean, if I had known some of the stuff that's, and I've been treating really badly by different groups, and I'm sure they're everything from religious to government to skeptics. I mean, they're doing some nasty stuff to me for a long time. So my next book is going to be fiction, but based on truth.
All right. And our guest this evening, Noreen Rainier, she has written a book, A Mind for Murder, The Real Life Files, of a psychic investigator. And we have links to her books, to her website on our site. You can also find her book, The Practical Psychic. And she goes into developing your natural abilities, that book out in 2011, developing your natural intuitive abilities. So if you want to tap into your own skills and abilities and understand how to do what Noreen does, make sure to pick up a copy of that book as well. We're coming up to another break here, top of the hour. When we come back, we'll continue talking with our guest. We'll find out more about her. We'll also find out about frauds and charlatans from a psychic and medium perspective. How would she recommend that we watch out for the frauds? And we'll take your phone calls next. I'm your host, Dave Schrader, and this is Coast to Coast AM.